that with me experiencing being a transformation coach, I've discovered that people really want to be better. And a lot of times people are not shown the way, but they're thrown into the way. Of any sorts, we have to meet people right there, right where they are. That's the only way we'll be able to really push forward.
Welcome to another episode of Bright Bridge Academy. This is the place where the people get to hear you and the world get to see you, man. We're back for the part two of the conversation, Who Speaks for Us? Yeah, this is an amazing conversation. I think it's so healing, it's so enlightening. And I think it speaks to the highest level of where all of us operate. You know what I'm saying? And I love it, man. And if you have not liked or subscribed to the podcast, please like and subscribe to the podcast. It's the only way I grow. It's the only way that I will continue to do this. It costs money. It costs time. It costs energy, effort. I'm just appreciative of the voices I have in this room with me today. Man, I'm so appreciative of these voices, and we're going to jump right back into the conversation, man. We left off talking about rites of passage, and I want to talk about that, gatekeeping, and just some of the other stuff that we need to do we need to know in order to move the needle. I feel like if we're, like to your point, Tony, we have a lot of conversation. A lot of conversation, and a lot of people got a lot of opinion about things. But my thing now, as a forward thinking leader in the Black community, if what you are pushing and what you are doing is not moving the needle,
you ain't doing nothing, bro.
Bro, you listen. You can stand on whatever you want to stand on, and this is right and this is wrong. But bro, if you're not moving the needle in this thing, because we are in a bad place.
Y'all. They say they stamped it.
I stepped it. Okay. They stepped it, but if you ain't moving the needle, bro, you ain't doing nothing.
There's a brother that said one time, he said, man, if you sitting here, he said, I'm going to follow, and that's how I am. I'm going to follow truth, right? I'm going to follow truth. I don't care whose mouth it come out of. I'm going to follow truth, right? Yeah. And so, but you can't sit here and holler at me like I'm a punk.
Yeah.
And make me believe what you're saying
right. Just
because you hollering at me.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? But if you present it to me with truth,
yeah.
I ain't got no choice.
It's factual.
You see what I'm saying? Right. And so it is what it is. So yeah. That's my thing. If you out here and you doing what you say you're doing, then I'm probably going to get with you and I'm going to help you do it. If it's right, I'm going to help you do it. But if you out here, like you said, you know, you standing on this and standing on, you ain't doing nothing, then I'm like, I'm just going to leave you where you stand.
Yes.
You know, because now, this is my belief now, is that we living in the time of what I call manifestation. Like, you don't even have to argue. Like, I would say, like, I know you're an educator, but I sat with some sisters the other day who are teachers, and they very fine people, and they care a lot. And I told them, I was like, you know, the school system's horrible. And they were like, how you know what we're doing? I said, hey, look, this is no affront to y'all. Like, I know y'all care. I know y'all doing everything you can. I said, but the time we're living in, look at the product.
Yep. Yep.
Like, we can argue about whatever you want to argue about.
Yep.
700,000 kids will graduate from high school this year, functionally illiterate.
Yep.
That's right. You know, my nephew came out of Manassas a few years ago, and I said, what you going to do? I don't know. And I hear this a lot. I don't know. It's unfathomable to me that you would be 12, 13 years in school and not at least, maybe you didn't come with a scholarship. Maybe you ain't got a job. You ain't got a plan.
Right.
A plan.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so my thing is that now everything is being kind of made plain.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have no excuses. Yeah. Like, everything is there. You know, so it's really time to stop talking about it and be about it.
Access to information, knowledge,
absolutely,
resource in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Yes. Because of technology and the internet.
You know what that creates? Ignorance is no excuse.
Right. That's right.
Ignorance is no excuse.
That's right.
And I'm going to tell you what, because I know Mike got something I'm going to say this. I had a guy sitting my, the young guy that I was helping work with me in the truck, and all the time their problem is their phone, right? So I'm gonna start making them leave their phone in the truck. So you can check your phone at 11 o'clock in the morning, you can check it again at 3. But what you're not gonna do is, I'm looking for you to work and you around here texting on some bullshit. So anyway, one, we were driving one day, I almost ran off in a ditch because this dude, 30, who graduated with my youngest daughter, said, "Miss Tony, did slavery really happen?" I was like,
"What?" Young child,
30. I'm driving, I'm like, "What?" He said, "Man, I'd be reading about it, but it sounded like cap to me." I'm like, "Cap? Wow. Like, you 30 wow. and you don't know, I mean, he dead serious." You know, yeah. I talked to him for a while because I knew he wasn't playing. He's dead serious. And so, you know, my thing is, man, is that, you know, the level of what we don't know and the knowledge that we don't have. Dr. King said this, man. He said that, I think he told Ralph Abernathy this. I think it was in Ralph Abernathy's book. He said, "Man, why should we integrate lunch counters when we can't afford what's on the menu? And we can't read what's on the menu.
Can't even read what's on the menu."
Education and economics, you know, are very, I mean, are one of the most important things. So now it's time, we can't, we know the problems.
That's right.
We got information. We got resources. $1.5 trillion a year we spend in this country as a whole. Back when Dr. King, before he died, he talked about we $30
billion. That's right.
At Mason Temple, the night before he died, he said we spend $30 billion as a people. At that time, we were like the seventh or ninth biggest country in the world. Now we spend $1.5 trillion, and we spent $800 million of it between November 24th and December 24th.
Wow.
We spent over half of it on Christmas.
Wow.
So we had the resources.
We got to get the word.
We got the space because we got a church on every corner,
right?
That sit idle. What? Whole lot. We got space. We got resources. $1.5 trillion a year that we spend in this country as a whole. Back when Dr. King, before he died, he talked about we $30 billion.
That's right.
At Mason Temple, the night before he died. He said we spend $30 billion as a people. At that time, we were like the seventh or ninth biggest country in the world. Now we spend $1.5 trillion, and we spent $800 million of it between November 24th and December 24th.
Wow.
We spent over half of it on Christmas.
Wow.
So we had the resources.
We got to do it. We got to get the word.
We got the space because we got a church on every corner.
Right.
That sit idle, what? Whole lot.
Yeah.
We got space.
5 days a week.
Right? We got space.
We got space.
Meeting space. Organizing space.
Yes. We got the space. And I oftentimes say, like, right. We're in Orange Mound right now. And one Sunday I was coming up here to clean up the floors and clean up. And from Barking Airways to like here is at least 12 churches. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking at all the cars and stuff. I'm like, we all can afford it because we know church has been a pillar in the black community since slavery. Mm-hmm. We can afford to sit out one Sunday and go in the community that you're in and serve the community. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's too much like, right? But I want to hear, this is good. I want to hear what you have. Did you have some?
I don't have anything. Y'all
covering for it. Like, this is really good.
I just, I don't want to interrupt.
I want to speak to something that Terrell said earlier at the beginning of the first session with regard to the blueprint, I believe it was, you mentioned. One of the issues with a blueprint is that it's not instantaneous.
Right.
It takes time. It just starts from conversation. And then you got to put pen to paper.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, and say this is what needs to be done, but it cannot just be done by one person. Now, you have one person that may be qualified to do the
yes.
layout, but when it's all said and done, we just can't say, man, we got $1 million blueprint.
Right.
And it just sits there.
Yeah.
Right.
And nothing built from the blueprint. So talking about it, going to what Tony said earlier, talking about it is one thing, but actually moving forward, that's the thing, because you lose people along the way. Once you start really progress, you lose people, and that's what happened with the civil rights movement. Once Dr. King died and others started dying, it's almost like church pastoral succession. You don't teach somebody else to take up where you're leaving out, because there's no expectation of death.
But you know what, Godfrey? You can't leave out the forces that, like, Dr. King was on the Poor People's March when he died. Right?
Yeah.
And so, because he realized that economics was where we had to go. And so, and education, economics. So you can't leave out the forces that were against him, because all those white people who were with him when he marched for public accommodations and civil rights and the right to vote, when he started talking about equality and economics, they left him. Because they were like, we ain't talking about making the money player. We talked about it. I'm gonna tell you one of the most egregious things that they did to all of us growing up was that on Dr. King's birthday, or whenever we celebrate Dr. King, they only played a part of the speech.
Right.
That we call the hoop. The hoop, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? You come out with your text and you do your thing, you explain it, then you get to the end and you get excited, right? That's all they ever played.
Right.
Like, I never knew until I was 30 that the I Have a Dream speech was really called Return Insufficient Funds.
That's right.
They never played that part. They only played the speech from I Have a Dream. I was 30 years old when I found out that Dr. King said, don't buy no more Coca-Cola. Like, if you listen to the speech before the night before he died, all of that was before they start the speech at, that doesn't matter with me now. Mm-hmm. I've been to the mountaintop, right? Mm-hmm. That's where they start the speech. That's the hook, right? But he talks about way all in before that, don't buy no more Coca-Cola. We got, go take your money out them white banks and put your money in Tri-State. Mm-hmm. We got 6 or 7 insurance companies. We're going to have an insurance in. Just like you have a sit-in, we're going to have an insurance in. We're going to put our money in these black insurance companies. Like, he could have got killed outright for that in Memphis without no conspiracy, just talking about dealing with the money.
Right.
But they never played that for us because they never wanted us to hear that. All the time we were growing up, they never wanted you to hear that. I was 30 or 30-something when I first heard it, and I was like, wow, man.
Yeah.
Like, couple that with the fact that he talked against the war in Vietnam.
Yeah,
that's why
we don't know how much power we have until we see, like, why are these, and I'm not just gonna say white folks, but why are people so against black folks or black men or black women? Like, what are y'all seeing us that we sometimes don't see in ourselves?
They're against power, unifying. You know, they're against us unifying,
right? Becoming one and understanding what our economic value is,
exactly.
Right?
Once they understand the economic value, that money. Right, I don't care what color you are. Everybody going to work in this room every day. They doing whatever they doing every day for the money.
Right.
When it's all said and done, we doing it for the bread.
Yeah.
Because it's necessary.
Yeah, because you got to have it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because your family, you can't do what you need to do with your family if you don't have it. Neither one of us. None of us in this room. No matter where you're gay, straight, Muslim, whatever. We chasing that money.
So, let me ask you this. What has been or what is currently the black microcosm that Memphis wants to be, or we want Memphis to be? Like, you know, people say Atlanta's the black Mecca, or even Tulsa, you know, so back in the day before the bombings there. Like, what is it that we want Memphis to look like from this plan, or you know, kind of what direction are we trying to move forward in? Because
I think that we need to go to South Memphis, North Memphis. I'm just talking about when you talk about what do we want it to look like, we need to go, you know, because Jesus said, because you have not done it unto the least of these, right? Mm-hmm. You have not done it also unto me,
mm-hmm.
which means we need to go to the least of our people and at least get them up on a level where they can fend for themselves.
Right.
You know?
And to that point, I know we're in Tennessee, we're in Memphis, right? And Shelby County is the most poverty-stricken county in Tennessee.
Really?
Number one, Shelby County. the most poverty-stricken county in Tennessee. And so when we look at, to your point, Therese, like to figure out where we want to start at, we have to, that since I've been in the nonprofit sector, like I had to understand poverty on a different level because most people don't have. And so if I got to make a decision on whether I'm going to pay my car insurance, I'm going to pay my light bill, and I'm only making $12 an hour at Taco Bell, I'm paying my light bill because I got two, three kids. You know what I'm saying? And so to understand that, you know, I think.
Hide the car.
Or the fact that, to your point, Mike, like me, us being in the barbershop every day, we come across men every day that, because the barbershop used to be a place that you come and shep and jive, but now, I don't know about in your shop, but in this shop, Mike, everybody's serious. Everybody going through like money issues, like, and so, and then when we see stuff going on the news and things, you know, I hear my formerly incarcerated brothers, you know, really have like such a lackadaisical attitude about it, because, bro, I can't even vote anyway. Fuck this shit, bro.
You know why? Because they have been sitting around a penitentiary somewhere and not advanced themselves. You know what I'm saying? People think everybody in penitentiary ain't there for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So you know what I'm saying? So I found when I was in, these brothers can't read.
Right.
These brothers can't.
Right.
They don't have no way to rationalize what's going on. You know what I'm saying? And I was like working in the barbershop, man, and I was just listening to what people going through. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's everyday life going on in prison as well. We all know that. But man, just think about the basis of education.
Yes.
Being able to understand, and being able to understand where we need to be. These people have come to that door and we land, this is a whole barrack, let's say. And it's beds all along the wall, upstairs, all along the wall, and in the middle. And them folks go call school car. You know what them folks gonna do? Oh, they ain't going to school. What else you got to do? What else you got to do? And on their paperwork, they're saying release upon receiving your GED or release upon finish your education. And you laying there and I don't want to go to school.
Wow. Yeah.
But you know what? Wow. You know what, man? When I feel like I consider myself fairly educated. Fairly. I graduated high school at 21. Mm-hmm. I mean, I walked across stage at 18, mm-hmm. but I didn't finish my credits till I went to night school and finished that. Then I went to State Tech. I went to State Tech and played basketball. I played basketball. I stayed at State Tech 6 years trying to get a 2-year degree. Didn't never get it. But my thing is, you know, I used to sit in school, man, and look out the window and be like, I'd rather be anywhere in the world than this.
Yeah.
Because it didn't catch my attention. Mm-hmm. There wasn't nothing in wow. there to catch my attention. Wow. I don't know whether as a male or black man or whatever, but it just wasn't nothing in there other than gym.
Right.
You know, I was at gym every day, but the other periods, you know, before I came down here, the other periods I was, you know, around back of the band room selling loose joints.
But you was mapping every day.
Huh?
You was mathing every day.
Oh, I was mathing now.
You know how to do math every day.
I learned how to count quick.
When you start talking that game, right. then I got your attention.
Right.
I can be in a room right now. I have a barbershop as well on Ells Prison. And if I'm talking about some dope or some bullshit,
Oh yeah. We
sitting around like me and having a conversation like we having right now, ain't nobody, I ain't hearing that shit, Big Mike.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. That shit don't make no sense.
Is that a pride thing, you think?
I just think they so lost that they don't have the ability to be able to comprehend on a certain level.
I think you get excited about talking about what you know. And if you don't know nothing about it, then you either don't want to hear it, or, you know, you just be quiet. You know, yeah, some people who just, you know, when you start talking, they clam up.
I have a saying now, and I really hate that I have this saying. I most of the time, I'm too embarrassed to say it. But I'm going to say it now in this space. When I think about the barbershop and when I think about conversations we have And excuse my language, Pastor. I know we're doing a lot of pastor. Yeah, excuse my language. But
he preaches Paul. So yeah. And Peter, yeah. Peter and Paul. It was a little rough around here. It might be okay.
It's sad to me because when I think about black men, and my organization helped and inspired me, and we meet on Sundays, and depending on if it's football season or not, you know, we depending on all that, you know, but most black men, if it's not, and I probably get hit for this, but if it's not pussy or sports, we don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, and that be the conversation. Like, if it's those two things, like, it's conversation.
That's because one of those things that we talked about earlier that's attached to masculinity.
That's right. Yes. Right.
Yeah, and so right. If it ain't that, you know, they don't want to hear none of that other stuff. When you talk about that, man, and that, depending on the age, as they get older, that stuff begins to define them. So that's why these football players,
right,
when they graduate from high school, if they graduate, they go to college, they get messed up by the very thing that they consume at the barbershop.
Yes.
So now they mess up for life, and, well, I'm going to bring your name up, but they get messed up for life because of what their comprehension level was.
Wow.
And it was tied to their manhood.
Wow.
So stuff like
that. But you know, I think we have to speak up though. Like everybody that's near me that when they start saying, for lack of a better term, dumb shit, you know, like especially when they start talking about relationships.
Right.
You know, one of the guys was like, man, Miss Tony, my girl, man, I ain't had nothing to wear to work, man. She ain't washed my clothes. You know, I said, okay, why you ain't watching? My man said, she's supposed to watch me. I said, hey, man, your girl 8 months pregnant. She's like, this woman, she about to drop it any day. You know, and I'm like, and you sitting here crying because you had to go up to work with this jacket on because she didn't get up.
Wash your clothes.
And my point is, that he's looking at me like I'm crazy. You like I'm talking to him.
You assuming that he know how to use a washing machine?
Oh, he knows. If you need your clothes washed and you got one, you gonna figure it out.
How long have you been washing clothes?
How long have you been?
10.
Let's say July.
Oh, we ain't deep.
Huh? Oh, Think about this. You know what I just thought all day? Like, what, Miss Tone? I'm like, y'all be sitting there asking me all these questions, man. You know, and I'm glad to supply whatever knowledge I got. I said, but you walk around all day with a computer in your hand.
Yeah, right.
I said, and you ain't got sense enough to push that little button that says Google to ask a question to get an answer to the things that you asking me. I said, all you use that phone is the text BS. Back and forth all the time. Because when I made them leave, they phone to the truck. When they got in the truck, person, they said, man, ain't nobody hit me. I'm like, yeah, because you be initiating all that stuff while you on the phone to be on the job. Right. And my thing was, these dudes is walking around with a computer in their hands all day long. Right. You ain't even got sense to be in school. If I was in school with a computer.
Man, look.
I'm just saying, like, you know, so I always think like this. God, man, brings for every problem in the world, God brings a solution through the womb of a woman.
Yes. Wow.
For every problem.
Wow.
Right? That's why it's so important. For women to protect their womb because they don't want to have babies now. Every problem, man, that comes into this world, God sends a solution in the womb of a woman.
Yes.
when they back when Bush and them were talking about this stem cell stuff, right? We can't do it because, you know, that's, we're playing God. No, God sent somebody in the world to solve this problem. Y'all want to monetize.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
See, that's where the problem comes in. Remember when the EpiPens went from $30 to $300? Mm-hmm. Yep. Right? Yep. They want to monetize the solution. And that's, yeah, that's what comes, that's where the problem comes in, because they always want to make money off of stuff. And I saw, I built a mother-in-law type suite for a guy who happens to be white, good dude, back in 2010. And his wife had blood cancer. And he's a missionary. He goes over to Kenya and does all that kind of stuff. And he started a GoFundMe thing and all, because it cost about $500,000. And stem cell cured that woman. That woman living right now. That's 14 years ago. Wow. Right? Wow. So, it, like I said, God will send a solution. Right? But I just wonder whoever's hands it gets in.
Yeah. Right.
But they probably got a car somewhere that runs on oxygen. But it's in a warehouse. Yeah. You know, in Illinois, sitting there.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
they got started with the water. They killed
them. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm just saying that, you know, that's the thing, man. I think that, you know, one of the questions you put on there was about leadership, man. You know, and I think what leadership, we have to take what leadership looks like and what kind of leadership in these days and these times is necessary. And that's like, you know, we have to have insight and foresight. You know, we have to be able to look into stuff and see where the trap is.
And to that point, what does leadership look like across the board? You said something on the last episode, Therese, about rites of passage. But I want to ask y'all, you know, as far as, you know, leadership, what does it look like across the faith sector, across the street sector, political sector, entrepreneurs? Like, what does leadership look like with, from an identity perspective across the board, and how can we make it a rite of passage?
I'm going to pass it.
Okay.
Before we get there, you mentioned, what does it look like? It looks like everybody here. Mm-hmm. Because everybody here represents the same main thing, but something else that's different.
Yes.
The issue is, I want to tell this brother how he needs to
be. Wow. Sam, come on.
And I'm not even really leading myself.
Right. Wow.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
My thing is, like, right now is education. So why would I be trying to tell him how to do his podcast?
Wow.
I need to focus on education.
Yeah.
Right? He takes care of the podcast. Wow. Right. He may call me and say, hey, man, I'm doing this episode on whatever, whatever. Right? We start to think that the way we feel about what we're doing, we should be able to tell other people what their responsibilities should be.
Wow.
But we shouldn't. We got to be accountable for us. Because if I'm not leading where I am, I can't tell this brother, well, what's going on with the prison ministry? Mm. That ain't my thing.
Yeah. Right.
He knows that that's his experience.
Right.
So he can speak to that. We have to be able and be honest enough to be quiet and let this brother speak to that experience so he can lead the people that are having that experience.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. I think another important asset with when it comes to leadership too is outreach.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are afraid to not mind our own business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're so busy in our own pockets. Like you said, everybody in here like kicking everybody's ass. You know what I'm saying? Well, if we have more conversations about it, we're not shit, I'm going to do something.
Right. And you may have a resource that can help me figure out what's going on with me. The same way pastor has a role. I may be able to, he can send people to him, but their roles are totally different.
Right.
And then we go to the other side of the room. If I don't understand the value and the wealth that's also created from insurance, if I'm not willing to listen to that information that this brother is giving me, I'm going to fail personally. And it's going to hurt him because it hurts the overall goal.
Yeah. Wow. I've taken my career path, I try to spill the beans, man. Mm-hmm. I ain't gonna lie to you. I try to give all the gems. I tell people how much we earn, how you get in this, what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Just because I shouldn't have been 32, 33 years old starting this business. I could have been doing this right out of college. How many more years I could have been
supposed to be in gatekeeping? Mm-hmm. That's the next topic.
Yeah.
And we were right into this. Yes. We were right into this.
Right.
And you know, and I found out that the part that hurts the most is there are people that look like me that gatekeep and don't want anybody else to get into industries of any kind. It's like, man, come on, man, we're so much better, stronger together. If all of y'all do the same thing, cool, I can vent to you, talk to you, you know what I'm going through in real time. If everybody's entrepreneurs, or it just, it's crazy to see that sometimes I'm in spaces with people that look just like me, that they see me as their threat as opposed to
your competition.
Yeah, like God blessed all of us with this opportunity. And however you want to use your wealth to benefit your kingdom and your community, that's up to you. I'm not judging you, but I'm not your competitor.
Yeah. I've always said, and I've experienced this since I started my show, like it's been 2 years. And I got on there one time and I said, people want to see you do good but not better. I started my show, I didn't want to go in someone's studio and pay them $100 an hour. And I look up in 8 episodes, hell, I paid you what I could have been purchased. Right. So I'm reaching out like, hey y'all, what I need? I need sound, I need this, I want this, this is my vision. And people were responding to me and I'm like, let me look through what I'm saying. Maybe y'all misunderstanding me. I want to know what to buy.
Right.
That's all. I don't need you like to really come in here and do anything for me. What sound? What's a good mic? What's a good camera? People stop responding to me.
Wow.
So now when people come at me, I'm like, hey, should I send you everything?
Yeah.
Because my audience is not your audience.
Right.
The people who you sell insurance to, I don't know them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But everybody want to be selfish. We don't want to help each other.
Yeah.
And that's,
I think sometimes you just have to move past, man. Like you were saying, that you got, the gatekeeper. Sometimes you just have to, my whole thing is like, if I'm doing what's right,
next.
First thing is, I really don't care what you think about me. Mm-hmm. It's taken me a while to get to that point. But I think sometimes because of time, we could talk about money is necessary and absolutely is, and other things are necessary, but time is something that we can never get back.
Right.
Time that is spent well pays dividends in the future. Mm-hmm. But time wasted,
that's right,
can never get it back. So that what he was saying was that, to me, was that, the people who sit there and they're not celebrating your success, or they're jealous of you, or they're competitive, they want to be, I move past them. Because I got a different agenda.
Well, it's also this agenda, like, I know what y'all make. So if we just put our collective money and minds together, what difference could we make for
breakfast? Right.
I know what y'all bring in. You and me sitting over there, $1 million, you 35 years old, running a Allstate or State Farm. I know that. Right? And so, and you sit here, high and mighty, pointing at all the problems, but you are one of the solutions. You know what I'm saying? You just said
it could be.
Could be.
But you're actually a part of the problem.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that part bothers me. It's almost like there's a sense for me being in a position now, not transparently, like, I never dreamt of this. I'm from the hood, North Little Rock. We grossed over $750,000 last year. Best year in my 5.5 years of business so far. And my thing is, like, I account for how much I earn with my staff. So I let them know where the money went for marketing, where everything, very transparent. I said, look how much money went into the investment of the community. It was like $50,000, which is a huge amount. And I think they look at me like, man, you're crazy. I ain't about to be giving no money back to Memphis. But I'm pouring in because that's what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
I mean, that's just how I'm built. But I also want to, whatever I can do to make sure that people have something that makes their life a little bit better, through my business, that's the whole point of being a small business. Right. But not everybody's thinking like that. And I think it goes to
so what you value.
Exactly.
Your value is, you see value in the things that you're doing, that you're giving back. Everybody don't see value in
giving everybody money. And I think that's one of the main issues at Memphis that I'm encountering, is when I'm going to other business owners and other people, a lot of times I'm hitting roadblocks. And just, they don't think the same way. It's meant like I'm trying to stay out the way. Yeah. I just want to make my money, go home, serve my people, I'm going to go home. It's like, man, we're never going to get anywhere if you keep doing that.
Yeah.
And at some point, I guess there has to be a shock to the system. And I think maybe this XAI can shock everybody into understanding we have to be our collective, have a collective voice and collective power to maybe work together to get what we need and be self-sufficient. But I think that's, speaking from the entrepreneur side of things, I'm sure you feel the same way. I think a lot of us just stay out the way, and that's just, it's easy to say.
It's easy to say, and I didn't think about that until, of course, when I got in the sector I'm in now with nonprofits, like so many of us, like looking for volunteers, looking for people to help. that's the number one thing, bro. I'm just staying out the way. I don't want to do too much because I don't want to be seen. I don't want to get no shine because I don't want to get no flack. And so we've adopted this stay out the way mentality as black men, but our communities are dying. Have died. Our communities are suffering so hard when we complain about Artavion and Clontario stealing our cars and shit, but nobody wants to get in the ring. Everybody wants to sit on the outside and say, man, them folk ain't doing that, man. The mayor ain't doing that, man. The police, man. But, like, it's work for all of us.
But can I ask you a question? Because I know you dabble in this space, Ray, and I think all of us do at some level, is that, you know, we talk about physical health, working out and stuff. I know you work out. I know we were talking about working out and stuff before. All y'all look like y'all fit on again. What I realized a while ago was that mental health is more, if not more important than physical health. Because mental health, your brain drives everything, right? Mm-hmm. Your mental state, whether you feel like getting up and going running at 6 o'clock in the morning, you have to, this has to make you get up and go do that, right? And rather than saying, oh, shit, this pillow feel good, you know. So my thing is that, you know, how many podcasts do you see about physical working out? Versus how many podcasts you see about us dealing with the mental side of, and I say that because you what you were talking about is that it's a mentality of staying out the way. It's a mentality, man, because we don't want to be seen because we don't feel good enough, man.
We
self-esteem.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, our self-esteem is not. We just don't feel good enough, man. And we should. We don't feel a lot of time. We don't feel like our voice. Like really, really
qualified, and the space I'm working in now with coaching, like I deal heavily in self confidence and self esteem is what I believe about myself as a black man, and self confidence is me actually doing what I believe about myself. Yeah. And so most of us, to your point, we don't believe that we have the value. We don't believe that we are good enough. We don't believe that I'm worthy enough to stand even in a barbershop and say something positive because I got so many checks on me that everybody say I'm too bad. So I'm just going to sit back because I'm just going to stay out the way. And so that overtakes us. So what I teach as a life coach, like, confidence is the willingness to try. And so many of us, so many pieces and pillars to y'all points in our community don't go because we don't want to try. Because if I try, that means I got to be seen.
Well, what do you think comes first?
What's that?
In terms of between confidence and self-esteem.
Esteem first. I have to believe that.
I'll tell you why I think it's different.
Okay, what do you got?
I'll tell you why I think it's different. Because the first law of the universe is motion.
Mm-hmm.
And the second law is order.
Okay.
And so a lot of times, man, you can't, you know, we sit back and we like, we put stuff on paper, man. We got that theory down. That theory is down, baby. We're like, we got it, man. We ain't never done nothing with it. Yeah. And it's theory, you know. Yeah. And we hear a lot of times, and I've said in the past, and I've heard people say, once I get everything together, then I'm going to move out on it. But shit, one thing I had to realize was, you know, never have it all together. Right. So the reason I say confidence comes because when you move out and you start doing, and you see, then your esteem builds up, like, oh, I can do this. Because when I started doing construction, I left my job and I started selling. I started going around a black expo around the country. Me and my younger brother selling T-shirts, right, making decent money. But I was away from my children who were little at the time. But I didn't know that I could go 30 days and pay my bills. When I realized I could do this and make money. And I paid my bills, it gave me
confidence.
More confidence to go forward.
That's true. Right.
And
that's
it really made me feel it made right. me feel good. Right. I said, oh shit, you can do this. You can do this.
Yeah.
You did it, man. No. You know what do you hear what he's saying to you?
I heard exactly what he's saying.
So you think about back in barber school, you're talking about I'm going home. And I said, you ain't going nowhere. We're going to do this shit together. We're going to get this car fixed, and we're going to do this every single day. That's just the support to help you build your confidence to be able. That's the thing that we need as a whole.
Man, that's not what everything.
Not everything that you're doing is going to be right. So Tony Mike, I'm going to say, Mike, you know, you be 16 on center, but to make this window, we're going to shorten that and do this, do that. But we have to listen to each other because, you know, the iron sharpens iron as the continent's man sharpens man.
Right.
So when you start putting yourself in position to be able to do different things, you can't know it all. So you got to listen to somebody.
Right.
And then it's going to be a time to be able to say, damn, it's wearing me out. And preacher come along and say, Mike, look, we're going to do this and do that. So that still builds your perseverance and confidence and you go a little further.
Right. And that's and also why gatekeeping is so bad.
Yeah.
Gatekeeping does the opposite.
Exactly.
Especially when you see people that look like you, you have a certain expectation. I'm going to do something.
Yeah.
They look like me.
Yeah.
And then when you start asking those questions, you're trying to get information. Oh man, I just worked really hard and like, okay, well, what, you know, do you, what kind of method did you do? What was your process? I just worked hard or anybody else can find out what I can do to be successful.
Exactly.
And then you start to, and so for some people though, for some people, that's what hurts their confidence and self-esteem.
Right.
Because they won't help me. Maybe I'm not qualified. Because they're not sharing information with me. Now, they may be sharing information with somebody else. What is it about? Then here comes the self-esteem thing again.
Yeah,
well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Or maybe I shouldn't try to go get this contract. Maybe I shouldn't go to the trade show. Because somebody didn't share some information. But you see how positive. Here is a human example of result from this man's work.
25 years later.
Exactly. So we see the results of how being persistent, but also having somebody who decided not to gatekeep the information.
Right.
Hey, man, it's not going to hurt me. It's not going to hurt my money to see you go to that shop. I'm just going to be at that shop.
That's it right there.
That's
it right there.
Yesterday.
That's it in a nutshell. I'm worried about somebody.
Yeah, somebody good.
Like you said.
I'm teaching you like this so you can go feed yourself and your family. I should want to see this man eat. I should want to see this preacher have a church full of people and they thriving and doing. I should want to see that. But if you're dealing with somebody in these spaces who don't want to see that, we know the phrase is all skin folk.
And it works. It works in a tangent. And for some people, you know, some people esteem it needs more work than confidence. Some people confidence needs more work than esteem. But it all like if I don't believe that I'm better than what I think I am, it's not going to fly.
That's where mentorship is so important. Like I said, because you could be here with no mentor. And just be in your mind like that the whole time. Like, I just ain't good enough to do whatever. But you could have a mentor like Mike who said, hey, man, you're going to be a barber. I don't care what you do, man. This you know, that bullshit, and we're going to go and be a barber.
Make sure you get the gas. And come on, man, come on to class.
Like, the thing that mentors do, man, that's so important is they help you meet and overcome obstacles.
Right.
Because everybody's going to have obstacles in your life. Regardless of what you do, where you are, who you do it with, you're going to have stuff that comes in your way. And it's how you meet those obstacles and overcome them, which that gives you that confidence and gives you that esteem.
Right.
When you overcome, you're like, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, and you know what gets in my way as a black man to even admit that I need help. To admit that I ain't got it all together is my ego.
Like we said earlier, ego. About the conversation, certain conversations, like you said, they get quiet on them.
Yeah. Right.
That's a lack of confidence. Or it's like, oh, I can't really talk to this.
Right.
And it's quiet. Let me kind of shrink because I don't really know about this. And I don't want to show out. And it's
We have to teach black boys it's okay to say you don't know something.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. It's okay to say not to say something.
They ain't no dumb questions. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. 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 So right. You don't ask.
I don't know how to do no more. Say I don't know how to do it. And then that way I can get you to a place where you'll feel confident enough to be able to do it.
Right.
When you come, you can accomplish yourself.
One thing you mentioned too. We gotta be okay with making mistakes sometimes. Yeah. You know, man, we don't like rejection.
Nah, we don't like
it. So, I mean, so, I mean you, like day to day, just imagine anybody you interested in, you go up to them and they reject you. Like, yeah, I can second guess myself. But a lot of times, you just gotta keep going, being persistent.
Yeah, like,
I'm going to face rejection, and that's okay. And I'm gonna learn through that. That's a skill set too. I don't think a lot of these young people are okay with rejection, and it leads them down another rabbit hole of, oh, you don't like that? I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you. And it's like, oh, wait a minute,
that's
bro.
That's the other part.
You can't tell me you want to be a firefighter or you want to do this profession and you not putting no work towards that. I'm not going to sit here and shoot the shit with you and lie to you. There's no action that shows evidence that this is the direction you're heading. Right? So when you tell them that, now that pride takes over. The Bible talks about, we know what pride does. Right? So it's so many different interchangeable things that I think for young people, they have to break down and ask themselves, am I humble? Am I going to let you pour into me? So that way, Big Mike can tell you, hey man, forget that. We're going to go to AutoZone and get this part. Some people don't want to hear that. This generation is raised from a different generation. I am all of us from a different group. So I will let you pour into me. But I think the attempts now, man, these kids are a different way.
And right now, we're tearing down a culture of compliance and trying to build a culture of accountability.
Right.
So we grew up on a culture of compliance. You're going to do this. You're going to obey. You're going to do what I say to you. But that takes away the accountability, the transparency, because if you're going to tell me I got to do what you say, dude, I ain't going to really tell you how I feel, so I'm just going to hide. I'm going to figure out a better way to hide.
Yeah,
and right. Now, like, even in the space of helping inspire men, we allow them to cuss. We allow them to say how they really feel, because we're trying to build a culture where we're learning them. And so when we hear it, if they're safe enough to say what they're feeling around us, then we can hold them accountable. Because right. We don't know where yet. Otherwise, it's just do this, do what I say, obey, and
I'm wrong, so listen to what I'm telling you.
Right.
And
right.
With that being said, I had a question for my pastor.
Oh man, come on.
So
I've been waiting.
Yeah, we talked about, you mentioned 5% of your church men. How many black men you seen? However many in prison, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That number is way more than 5%. Way more than exact numbers.
But
shit, that was
so a good one. Succession. Man. You mentioned succession planning in the church. And the reason why I mention this is because we live in the Bible Belt. So I'm going to make it real for at home.
Yes.
Right? And I've seen this because I was in ministry for 13 years. And I turned down opportunities to pastor because I didn't see where it was really going. It was just a job for a lot of guys. It really wasn't to teach a younger preacher or be a pastor to then lead other men to then start taking over and leading. My question for you is, yes, you got to answer. How do you think we can affect change in a black church to raise up more leaders to take on that job? Because we got a lot of black Christians in this area, right? And the same in your case as well, right? Because I've even seen where guys who grew up under Islam went away because they were like, damn, two different sides of the same coin.
Yes, yes.
You see what I mean? Okay, so as a black pastor, how important the black church is in the community, what are some ways that we can develop better solutions to raising up black leadership? Black male leadership in the church?
It's a good question, Pastor Upshaw. let me start off by saying this. I've been in ministry all my life. My dad was my pastor. He passed away in 2008, and after he passed away, I became pastor a year later.
never had a thought that I would be. That's number one. My dad didn't teach me to be the next preacher. He taught me to be a man, take care of your family, love your family, all that. That's what he taught me. The greatest thing that we can do in leadership or to prepare new leaders is to teach them the importance of serving. It ain't about the preaching. It ain't about how many people you got and all that kind of stuff. Serving to affect change. I work for a Christian nonprofit organization as well. I've been there now going on 18 years. I think I probably seen you there. Yeah, I probably seen you there. We work with y'all a little bit in MLGNW. But when you, as we're living in the Bible Belt, poverty has become lucrative for nonprofit organizations.
Absolutely.
Wow. Very little. So if you don't have any poor people, you don't have other people that would give money to put into the poor communities. So poverty has become a staple in the community. What if we took leadership in our church, and I'm going to give you a good example. In my church, I'm in South Memphis area, Florida Tree area. And I can probably rattle off about 10 churches within a few blocks of each other. Anlick Store, all of that.
Chicken and cake.
So the title home companies, they become the banks of the community. Liquor stores become the banks of the community because people go there and cash the checks and all that. The best way to affect change is teaching people how to serve themselves out of poverty, but build up that community. Just because you're out of poverty does not mean that you have to leave your community. Mm-hmm. And I think when our kids go away to college, sometimes we tell them, don't come back.
Right.
But if you don't tell them don't come back, don't complain about the poverty that's left here.
Right.
So one of the better ways for me, like I said, I can only go by the model that my father taught me. Like, son, they're about to be a pastor, elder, whatever. If they can't call you brother, and if they can't recognize you, when you're walking up and down the street, you've done nothing at all. And that's what I live by. People may not make new people come moving to the community. They may not know my name, but Rev, no, that's Rev. And we laugh and talk and all that. Come out of church, become members of the church, go for a while and all that. Sometimes they move out. But when they leave where we are, the greatest thing that I teach people is that you have to learn how to serve people and find people that are experiencing things like you have. Don't go look for something new. Look for something current and affect change. See that young lady. I used to teach prenatal classes at my job some years ago. And the young ladies were somewhat baffled because they were predominantly taught by women. But some of the things that I was teaching them from a man's perspective, like, hey, some of y'all are pregnant by the same guy. Wow. And y'all know it. And y'all are competing. Say, who got who?
Yeah.
And when it's all said and done, he got you, and then he got somebody else in an apartment complex somewhere. Now these kids are growing up being brothers and sisters. They may have an opportunity to date as siblings. Wow. So look at the issues that we create.
Right.
Because we're not teaching people how to serve each other. We're teaching people how to get over on each other. And it happens a lot in the black church, in pastoral ministry. If you had told me 20 years ago, I've been a pastor. Like, that's somebody else. I've been a pastor now 16 years. And I love it. I minister music, all that. From my other conversations, I minister music, play drums, talk choir, all that kind of stuff. But there was a set time that God had for me to do what I had to do. I've run across a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds. And I've been to spaces that people told me I should have never been. I've been to the Havanas. I've been to Burn of Desire, all these different places. People are like, man, what's wrong with you? You different. And they find out in the past, like, man, what you doing here? I'm here because somebody in here needs to meet me. And I'm going, I'm free. Mm-hmm. I'm free. Yes, sir. But to answer your question, teaching people through serving, serving and knowing what that is, your community is. There used to be a time where the preacher lived in the same community that he passed.
That's right.
Especially in the country.
They
lived in the parish next door, or their house was converted to a church. Mm-hmm. But now,
there's this big light syndrome of Pastor Lil way out in Lakeland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And this church down there in South
Carolina. Yeah, church in the hood. And the house is 10 times bigger than the church.
Right.
And he made the church every money, every month, every Sunday to let's pay this building, let's give a bunch of this building fund, and a new building ain't come up yet.
Don't know.
And they go, they get in their big car, the car costs more than the church building that they got, and they go back out to their own life. And these kids, going back to what we talked about, school, a lot of these pastors don't even go to serve, to go to Donuts for Dads. I've had church members say, hey, can you come to my daughter's or my son's donuts? Yeah, what school is it? Yeah, I got you. I'm there. The kids see me, because I grew up in an era where kids thought teachers were superstars. Yeah, you saw your teacher at the grocery store?
Oh, man.
And now the teachers look real people.
They got a life.
It happens to me all the time.
What past lunch y'all do? But seeing teachers like that, seeing people that I was raised up around, taught me that some little kid somewhere is going to see me serving somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I better be on my best behavior. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can't be out in the club with them. I can't be twerking with their mama. And mm-hmm.
Right.
Because at some point, they're going to see me around their mama. Mm-hmm. And how I treat their mama is going to be how they're going to define me. Right. So you teach people to serve people. Sometimes, like my dad used to do, my dad would take the shoes off. My mama would buy him some brand new shoes. My dad would take his shoes off his feet and give them somebody. Go home. My mom was like, Smith, where are your shoes at? Oh, so I saw so-and-so, they need some shoes. Lord have mercy, I gotta go buy this much more shoes. And that's me. That's me in a nutshell. Somebody want need something? If I got it, there you go. But I can get another. But you learn that through serving. Right. And I can go, God has blessed me. I ain't got a lot of money, but I got God's ear.
Right. Mm-hmm.
To the point where if I go somewhere and do a job, make a couple $100, I know somebody in need. Because I don't attach myself.
You're not defined by that.
I'm not defined by my career. Yeah. I know what it means to be broke.
Yeah.
I know what it means to watch my dad and back in with these kids as coaching kids, watch my dad come home and tell my mom, feed the boy, I'll be all right. Didn't know it was because we didn't have enough food for everybody. And we thought he was just fasting. He just didn't have enough food. But he talked, feed the boy. It was three of us. Feed the boy. I'll be all right. Feed the boy. And so growing up, going back to the hugging and kissing the kids, my kids, one of them is in college at Mission Valley State. Supported me in everything he does. My daughter goes to Bleep Empire Hair School. She's about to graduate. Support them in everything that they do, because I know what it means and what it feels like to have nothing.
Yes.
Even as a pastor's kid, so real pastors don't make a lot of money.
Yep, that's right.
They don't make a lot of real leadership. That's right. They don't make a lot of money. Right. Hirelings do.
That's right.
And real leadership don't make a lot of money. That's right. So I learned through serving. I know what it means to fast. I know what it means to do without. I know what it means to be up at night trying to help somebody else get their child through some kind of rehab program. I know what that feels like. I ain't said, call my secretary. No.
You did.
Me.
Right.
So, I know what it means for people just want to invite me to a service to preach because they think I'm bringing some money along with me.
Yeah.
But you ain't doing nothing.
Right.
And you're right down the street. Or you're right up the street. So, building leadership through serving, learning what leadership is, seeing that young man and say, hey, I see something in you. Come here, let me talk to you. Every Sunday when I get down to church, when I'm done preaching, the little girls and the young men come up and they almost in a line because they want to laugh and talk. Just getting them to know me as a human being. And I'm asking, how school going? Yeah. Let me see your grades. Let me see your competence. Do I need to come to your school?
And you didn't have to prophesy that one.
No, I ain't asking for no money. I ain't asked them all. I ain't bend their mamas down.
Yep.
Exactly. Hell, right. Real talk. Exactly. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, and these kids, you see them open up and they warm up. And now they come to me. Instead of me saying, hey, how your son, how your daughter doing? Now, I brought them to church, and they come to church every Sunday. Now they want to come talk because now they have somebody in leadership that they can trust.
Right.
And because I serve, they now see when they get ready to graduate high school and go to college, whatever they desire to do, trade school, whatever, they know serving is a part of the heart of their mind.
Yes.
They use their hands. there. No, somebody else needs something built. Somebody else needs something done. But it has to come through a heart of serving. If I lose my church or leave my church right now, you can find another pastor. You're going to find another me.
Yeah.
You can find another leader. You can find another person to be over there, but you're not going to find another me.
Right. And not you. Thank you. Thank you so much, because I think we're inundated in this region with pastors. Mm-hmm. We're inundated with churches. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for what you just said. And what that said to me, it spoke to connection. It spoke to lived experience.
Yeah.
And I think lived experience birthed connection. So if what you just explained, if you can be honest with how you live, y'all can see me living. I don't live such and such. I live right here with y'all. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we can connect on a level to where you can see my lived experience, I can see yours. And that goes back to Christ and the disciples.
Yeah, right.
It goes back to next weekend, so many people finna celebrate the last 3 days of Christ's life. Yeah, right. But we're so engulfed
we're so engulfed in the last 3 days that we have forgot how he lived. So there's a reason for that, and this is going to speak to what Brother Tony, right?
Yes, sir.
Was saying earlier about the hooping part of mm-hmm. Have a Dream.
Oh man.
We like sensationalism. Mm-hmm. We like the emotionalism. Oh, he died. That's fine, well, good. But he lived mm-hmm. as well.
Right.
And he lived a common life. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that we miss. It's easy to get caught up in the emotion of the thing. Because getting caught up in the emotion of the thing means that you don't have to deal with the reality of something. Well, that's why weddings are so dangerous. That's an emotional truth.
Yeah,
but the marriage after that, yeah, that's what work is.
Right. Right.
Every day. I want this wedding. It's gonna be so big. Yeah, you spend $20,000 on a wedding, and you have no place to stay.
That's why 2 out of 3 marriages in America ends in divorce.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. And so it goes back to what we were saying earlier. This whole thing of sensationalism. And the next time we talk about Jesus is in December.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you'll skip 6-7 months. They have to talk about Jesus in December.
Yep.
That's it. Yep. We'll talk about Pentecost between that, but yeah. But December, you know, we and it's only because, and it's sad to say, that even the church is commercialized.
That's true.
It's commercialized. Yep. If you can make the church is making money, Walgreens making money, Walmart is making money, street vendors making uh-huh. money, uh-huh. everybody making money on this Jesus that they don't even believe in.
Wow. Let me ask you this. Let me say this to you, bro, friend. Like, because I don't want to say this before, when you were talking about, I think we were talking about, when you were explaining about, I guess, masculinity in church, and what we were talking about, why men, there weren't, you know, many men in church. And I know that what you were saying for me was, that was part of it. But the other part is that, and I know you probably heard this, that a lot of black men view pastors as pimps,
mm-hmm.
or view pastors as people who would take, and let's be, we'll have to be fair in it. There are those out there who, I've done a lot of work. Let me tell you something. Over 30 years, I've done most of my work in churches. I'm talking about construction. I built pulpits. I mean, I know a lot of preachers, good dudes, and you know, and I've been around some who that I just knew was just really about the money, you know. And so, I guess my thing, when you were talking about the thing about the shoe, you know, your father taking the shoes off his feet, I challenge you, and I'm right there along with you, that now we got to teach these kids or these people how to buy them some shoes.
Sure, yes. Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
Like absolutely. Like they say, give a man a fish, eat yep. for a day, teach him how to fish, eat for a lifetime.
Absolutely.
So I think now we have to elevate and evolve to the point to where we teach them how to get their own shoes. Because you ain't got one. Somebody pair of shoes. And as these children come to the church, and as they start trusting you more and more, come, you can't shoe all of them.
That's true.
You know, so
let me throw this out at all of you, and I know this probably changes the trajectory of the conversation a little bit, but to speak to your point,
how many gas stations do you go to on any given day that somebody approaches your vehicle and asks you for something?
Oh, a bunch of
almost every single gas station. Yeah. Just think, if you went a whole day, Lord, you really wouldn't. It's not reality, but in a whole day, how much money are we giving out to people instead of information?
Mm. Wow.
So the reason why I say this is because people, it's easier to ask and beg for instead of work for, like you said. Right. So they know they it's almost like run the track. Like, hey, this is my spot here. And they will fight over the spot.
So now
people have a spot and they sit there, hey man, you got a couple dollars. I just need to give me something. You got a couple dollars. Now I'm telling you something my dad taught me. We would feed people when they would come in at the church. And this man came in one day and he was like, hey man, Rev, I need something to eat. My dad's like, all right. So we went to the refrigerator, got some stuff, gave some. He looked and he said, I can't eat this. He said, well, you ain't hungry. You're not hungry.
But you know what? There are people out there. I mean, like, you see now, you go by the corners, you see these kids out there selling water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I very rarely have cash anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just be on the car. You know? And so, but I keep ones and stuff in my car, in my thing, in my van or in my wallet, just for the purpose of buying water. And I keep water in my truck all the time, but I may buy some water just because I had an altercation with a lady at a grocery store 15 years ago. Boys are selling candy in the parking lot of Chisholm Trail out there in North Memphis, you know, maybe more than 15 years. They had some Nestle's, whatever, and so I always bought some candy from them when I came out. And this lady was just, I don't want that mess. She was just going on. I'm looking at her, and then she looks at me and she said, you know what I'm talking about? That's that mess. I was like, man, they could be selling crack.
Sure.
I said, they're selling candy. I said, you asked me, so I'm just telling you, they're selling candy. They could be doing other stuff. They could be breaking in your car.
Right.
But they're selling candy. So, you know, then I was getting in the car, and I was talking because I knew one of the little kids, and I was like, hey, man, just keep doing what you're doing, you are all right, and blah, blah, blah. She came out, and she, you know, what y'all got? How much are you? Okay, give me $3 of those. He's like, thank you, man, whatever. But, I mean, sometimes we look at each other and we look at children trying to do stuff like these little boys. I heard a lady saying to me, Carl, the other day, well, I don't want that mess. I don't want no water. I don't drink no Gatorade. Man, I don't drink Gatorade either anymore because I kind of know what's in Gatorade now. But I buy the Gatorade and throw it on the floor of my truck. I don't really care. It's not me drinking the Gatorade. It's about me supporting somebody out there, because I've been on the corner selling Final Call newspapers, right? And I've had people cuss me out in my face, and I said, may God bless you to have a great day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I've had people come up and, you know, and pass me by, you know, 100 cars pass you by, and then somebody by stopping by a paper make you feel good, you know? Yeah. And so the thing is that, so when I see them, I try to patronize them because I know they're out there for a reason, and there's a lot of other things. So I think at some point we have to put something together where we can take that entrepreneurial spirit and say, hey, right, man, look, because I thought about it on this wise, that I don't carry a lot of cash, right? And a lot of people don't carry cash like that anymore because we're on a debit card or whatever. So what can we do to help them transform their business so that maybe they can make more money, because people are like, I ain't got no cash.
Yeah.
I ain't got no cash. Yeah. I ain't got no cash. You know what I'm saying? So
create them a QR code. Right.
So it's just about doing
The work.
Basically. You know, children, like you saying, what you doing? These children want somebody.
Right. They do.
Right. They want somebody to care enough about them to correct them.
Mm-hmm.
They really do, man. Mm-hmm. Children are like that. You have to ask yourself this question. What makes a child that come in this barbershop that's 5 years old, and you say, man, he's smart. Man. You know, he's smart. He popping, he doing this, whatever. He's a smart little kid, man. Good looking little kid. What happens in 10 years when he's 15, he's able to pull a gun and kill somebody in cold blood? Yeah. What has happened between that time frame?
Yeah.
in this environment that is taking him from that smart little 5-year-old child.
Because he didn't come out like that.
Right. To being a cold-blooded killer.
That's right.
And I think that's the area we have to operate in, you know, when we deal with children, man, is that, you know, like the Catholics say, you child for the first, I mean, you teach them to be a Catholic for the first 7 years of their life, they be a Catholic for the rest of their life.
Yep.
You know, why do I know, why can I sit here and say, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Wow.
I learned that.
Way back when, in first grade.
I learned that 60 years ago.
Every morning.
Right? 60 years ago.
Let's land this plane, y'all. Yeah. And this has been a great episode. Let's land this plane. We've been flying here for the, you know, for a while. And I want to kind of land it with this. If each of you that I invited, you know, and I'll let Sam have the last word. Each of you that I've invited, thank y'all so much. And again, I just asked, you know, this podcast is about bridging humans, bridging different sectors of our community that don't have bridges, like this, that don't have connection. Like, that's my purpose. That's my purpose. That's the purpose of this podcast. It's the purpose that I live in. And so I want each of you, just if you can give a 30-second to the sector that you live in, to the identity of the intersection that you come on this thing on. Speak to that man, if you can, for 30 seconds. And Sam, I want you to have the last word, bro. And we'll start with Tony, 30 seconds, and we'll go around, and then we'll end with Sam with the episode D. Because this is about intersectionality. This is about, you know, black manhood, and we all speak to a different sector of black man. And what sits up, the reason why I invited you. So I want you, if you can, speak to that Muslim man, speak to their business man, speak to their former incarcerated man, you speak to the Christian man, you speak to the queer man, and Sam, you take us home, man. I like that to be how we would Pastor bring us back.
That's why I'm glad you said about preaching. Yeah. Because you want to give me notes. You know how it is. You got to give me a little notes. Help me out a little bit. Thank you, Pastor.
I'll say this, you know, Islam is an Arabic word that means submission to the will of God. That's what it means. And a Muslim is this one who submits.
That's right.
Right? And so I'd say that I'm talking to all men, in that I'm committed to, in particular, black men. I feel like in your life you can only commit to so many things fully, and so let me put it this way: I'm committed to serving the black community, in particular black men, because we're the worst thought of. We are at the bottom of the totem pole perception wise, and I just want to use the rest of whatever time God gives me to help raise that perception, and also just help in a real way to change people's lives. So that's kind of where I'm at with it, and I'm willing to work with anybody who wants to work to make that, you know, effectuate that change.
So for me, I would tell that entrepreneur, just understand, like, listen to the voice of vocation. There's a book by Parker J. Palmer that talks about that, and not everybody's cut out to lead the same type of career path, but do understand that if God has put you in this position, your whole mission is to solve a problem, right? So I don't ask people what they want to do when they grow up. It's what problem can I solve? And so in that problem that you solve, are you then, you know, creating a solution for your local community? Whether that means giving back time, talent, or treasure, that is your obligation once you step into being an entrepreneur. That's a great strength that I think that God has given all of us to have the ability to do, but understand what you're stepping into, that role comes with a lot of responsibility.
And I would say to a man reintegrating to the community from prison, to get in a space where you can be positive, you know what I'm saying? Whatever you did, it's all behind you. It's not how you fall, it's how you get up and take off running to reconnect with society and the things that are going on. And just get with the people that are doing positive things and center yourself around something that you want to do and desire to do that makes you happy. And hey, just get up.
All right. So I'm speaking to, if you don't mind, I'm just going to speak to the men. And
yes, sir. Yes, sir. You good.
You know, there's so much that we can do as men in our communities. Don't limit yourself to just simply one thing. Find out what those things are that's in your heart to do. Learn to serve your community through serving through your true heart. Take care of your primary responsibilities, your family, and all of those things that are important. But make sure, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that you're true to who you are. Don't try to be like anybody and everybody else. Be true to who you are. And if you don't know who you are, take a good journey. Take time. Get among some good other brothers and maybe some sisters as well, but definitely some brothers to try to figure out who you are, to be able to identify with properly, so that when you do become a good servant, or you desire to become a good servant, that you can serve the right way and serve with your heart.
Wow.
Well, I tell the queer brother, you must first accept who you are, accept how you show up, and be comfortable in that. Don't let anyone define your manhood. If you let someone tell you you're not a man and you begin to believe that, that's not a damn thing, it's a you thing. Be open-minded, be willing to listen, and don't take offense. We all come from different backgrounds. We have all different ideologies, and we have a common ground. We have one common goal we're trying to achieve. So we have to kind of let go of all the childhood trauma, let go of being called a faggot, being called a punk, all of that. You have to kind of erase all of that from your memory and just be willing to move forward.
Well, first of all, thank all of you for being here. Thank all of these brothers for being here. Just an amazing group of gentlemen, I would have to say. It didn't take me long to figure out who's amazing. only thing I have to say is, the Avengers did not beat Thanos individually.
Wow.
They had to band together to get through. And that's exactly what we're going to have to do. And then if you know that story, Thanos really, he was on assignment by somebody else who was more powerful than him. When we get together, when we band together, we can start to make true change because we know what we're up against. Because everybody knows what we're up against. Not just him or me. We all know what we're up against, and we all have that responsibility. And so this experience today is proof of that. This wasn't just a conversation. This was not just a conversation.
No.
This was a sign of unity. And not just a symbol, or just not symbolic, but this was a show of unity.
Wow.
And I'm appreciative of being here, and I'm appreciative of every one of these gentlemen. I'm also appreciative to my brother for inviting me to assist in hosting. And I just want to give all you brothers a hand for showing up.
Yes, thank you so much for that, brother. This is Ray Bridging Humans, the place where the people get to hear you and the world get to see you. Love you, family. Peace.